Welcome, folks. This is the February 23rd Aries working group call. We are glad you're here. This is a Hyperledger meeting, and so there's an antitrust policy and a Hyperledger code of conduct in effect. Please reach out if you have any questions about those things. It helps us keep our meetings welcoming and free of legal conflict for any of the work that we end up producing. You're welcome to add yourself to the attendees list. I have the agenda link that I will put in the chat and make any other associated adjustments. So we're relatively low on numbers today. And so we might have rather than a normal full workup, we might just have a relatively informal meeting today and then return to our regular scheduled call next week. I don't know what the conflict has been, but there's large numbers of regular folks not attending. So there, anyone want to introduce themselves? Either as new or returning or for whatever reason.
This is Kalyan from India.
Welcome.
Yeah, so I am working in decentralized identity space for almost half a year. So working as a blockchain architect in one of the MNC.
Excellent.
So currently we are creating a platform, so which is based on decentralized identity and SSA concepts. So that is where I got into this space. And I'm just curious to know, so what is happening on this space? That's the reason I started attending these calls. And so I am glad that, having a discussions with the experienced people in this space.
We're welcome. We're glad you're here. Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
Here's announcements. Some of these are actually kind of pretty darn timely. So the Cardia Interopathon, I was expecting Mike to come and share details, but he isn't here today. But that is happening. One of the things that that Interopathon is involving is active testing of the move to out-of-band invitations. So during phase one, we're supposed to be accepting either out-of-band invitations or connection invitations as a QR code. And the if you would like, show up and test as part of that Interopathon. If you're interested, please ping me, or I will get some more details here next week, so that you can come and join if you like. That's completely voluntary. Cardia is a derivative project that uses Aries stuff, but specifically for health-related use cases. So it's kind of a special interest project a little, but their work almost always contributes upstream to the relevant projects. So, but it's hyper-focused on just the health credentials space. A non-creds is going. There is a repo in place. There is a Discord server as well for a non-creds. So that's going on. We had a request for Ursa wishlist items from the Aries community. And then this last one is, I should have a better link here and I can go find one. The DidCom users group that is actually at the DIF but does not require DIF membership is experimenting with a different concept. We struggled to find a time when even a half of the folks who wanted to come could come, just because of calendar fill and all the other things. And so they are experimenting with an asynchronous meeting concept. So we're tentatively calling an unsync meeting. The meeting is live every other Wednesday for about 12 hours, and you can stop in and asynchronously contribute to the meeting, listen, read, and all that stuff. It's an easy one to attend, even if you have another conflict. The one thing that I will mention is that as part of the request of participation is to pick and schedule some time on your calendar on the regular meeting day, which is every other Wednesday starting today, to stop by and participate in the meeting, which means you read the stuff that's been posted on the agenda, you vote on the various questions that the users group needs to accomplish, you contribute for the open questions or other sorts of conversations that happen in the Discord room, and that will and that keeps the meeting going. And then when the meeting ends, it's open for about 12 hours, which covers middle of day Europe all the way through US and into the early morning of Asia Pacific. And then that's when the meeting there will end. And so that's going on. If you give me a second, I will, I'll show you this actually in a second. I want to just show some stuff about Discord to help motivate those folks that have not made the trip there yet. Rocket Chat has been moved to read only. And so that's not a place that, that still works for our community conversations. So the DidCom user group is happening today. So if you're interested, you can happen by. There's nothing to sign, nothing to formally organize. You can just join the Diff Discord server, and there is an open channel for the DidCom users group that will let you do that. And I'll go ahead and show you that in just a second. So any other announcements that was not on my longer than usual list? Awesome. So on our discussion today, we are planning to talk about the conversation, hopefully a little bit formally, that we talked about last week about deep links between apps when you're moving back and forth on a mobile device and how to standardize that. And then before we talked about that, I wanted to give a quick overview of the move to Discord from Rocket Chat to encourage those folks that haven't yet to go ahead and do that. Are there any other topics that ought to be on our agenda today?
I would like to put something on it. We're working on something from the Diff Wallet Security Working Group and trying to do some device binding mechanism. And we are sketching out several DITCOM protocols, and we have some alternatives. And we're looking maybe for some guidance on what DITCOM veterans, I would say, would be the better ideas, and also how to where to put certain data in the DITCOM messages. What's the pros and cons of inline attachments or stuff like that?
Excellent. Let's talk about that. That might end up being sort of the main topic, depending on what we're able to get done today and who shows. So cool. Any other additions or adjustments to our agenda today? Paul, I'm going to add your link in under this topic here. Okay, what I want to do real quick is I'm going to adjust my screen sharing here. I'm going to show you Discord, and hopefully this will help anyone who is less familiar understand what's going on. So got to get Zoom to behave. All right, so here's a Discord window. This is similar to Rocket Chat, where you can have different servers here on the left. So here I've got one for the Diff. This is the Anon Creds Working Group one, and then the Hyperledger Foundation here. And there's a couple of useful things that I discovered that I wanted to share. So channels are listed here, and Hyperledger has chosen to put them in groups. For example, here's all the Aries related ones. And there's other ones for Besu and Fabric and similar, right? One of the things that you can do if you're not interested in one of the projects and would like to clean up your view, you can right click. And I'm going to unmute this for a second, but here's a whole bunch of channels that I'm not regularly involved in. And so I can mute the category until I turn it back on, and the whole thing kind of collapses and goes away. And that way it keeps my the channel thing here relatively clean. And so here are the sort of the people that are online from the on the Hyperledger server itself. The staff up here can help with any specific problems. There is also a like a server channel here for the folks trying to organize the chat stuff. So if you have any questions there, it's really useful. They can, the other thing that I'll mention that I'll show you in a second is threads can be quite powerful as they're implemented here. And so that's useful. Here, for example, is the beginning of the, here is the normal user group channel. And then there's a thread here for the unsync meeting. It shows up a little bit like this. One of the options you have is to open in full view, which pulls just that thread open is a normal view, which is pretty cool. And then, so here's the various types of people that are involved also in this specific group can kind of show you who's online in this particular case. And so that's really powerful too. So, so that's a little bit about how to make that actually work. Hopefully that kind of motivates you here. We don't have, there's a lot less conversation happening in here than was happening in Rocket Chat. And so that's one of the reasons I'm highlighting this again, is to help people sort of become familiar or manage the chaos a little bit. Any questions or comments or better suggestions than I have?
So is there any separate invite to join this channel? So I have an invitation for iPledger group and I have joined there, but is there any separate invitation?
There's not a separate one. There's just the Aries channel. All of the Hyperledger channels here are open to everyone, which means that just if you find Aries under the Aries group, then you'll be able to join that specific one. There are, other Aries channels for various things. The Bifold Project, JavaScript, Akapai, for example, are here. And so those are open and you can jump in as you desire.
Yeah. So that I understood. I'm talking about diff. There is just below the Hyperledger. Diff.
Yeah. Right? The diff has a separate one, and this is probably. Let me switch back to my normal thing. If you're curious about the DIDCOM user group and would like to be involved there. Let's see, I jumped through all the hoops. I'll go ahead and share this in the chat. This is the specific agenda, and there is a link right here when it says Discord channel. There's a link that will get you there.
Okay, great, thank you.
And the link is in the chat.
Okay.
So this is a new experiment that we're trying and subject to improvement as we learn and try new things for the DIDCOM users group. But you're welcome to go. And the fact that the meeting is open for so long on a Wednesday, meaning it's hard to justify not being able to make the schedule because of a conflict. So if you are interested, I hope that you will happen by there and be involved in active discussion. And it's a new concept, but it's one that handles the fact that the world's inconveniently round a little bit better than most scheduled meetings do. So we're trying to experiment with that and see if we can keep good, valuable communication, but in an asynchronous way. Anything else about the Discord move? Has anyone had trouble or needs help with that move?
Okay, so does it mean this Rocket Chat is just read-only?
Yes.
Okay.
So the Hyperledger Rocket Chat is there for read-only mode for a little while, and then I believe it's going to vanish entirely, and Discord is the new Rocket Chat for the purposes of Hyperledger.
And all the conversations which happened so far on the Rocket Chat will be moved here, or we are going to lose them maybe after once it is vanished.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
That was the decision.
Just a quick comment, Sam, on Discord. We've used that in the DEF CON community for a long time. A couple years, I guess, that I know about. And so it's really kind of a new interface type. So it'll be a little unfamiliar to people at first, but as you get used to it, I've seen where it's hosted like tens of thousands of people at the same time and in the same, what do you call it, environment space. And so it's really good. And so some of the complaints about Rocket Chat are going to go away once everyone learns the new interface. So if it looks strange to you, just give it a whirl, and I think you'll like it in the end.
I found it to be substantially more stable than Rocket Chat.
Yeah.
Just as a data point here. So that's really nice.
Well, I know DEF CON, one of the things they do is they hold Friday night movie night with everybody. And so there's a lot of people interacting all at the same time. It's really stable. And so it's got a good rep. I think this is a good move for us.
Excellent. Anything else on Discord? All right. So is anyone prepared to talk about the deep links between apps and app-to-app communication to continue the discussion we had last week? Okay. I think they might not have made it or had the time to make that happen. Paul, that means that your discussion is teed up. Would you like to drive the screen?
Yeah, I think that would help.
There you go.
Okay. Give me a second. Okay, can you see my screen? Wallet Security Standardization Roadmap?
Yep.
Okay. So I don't want to jump into the topic, but focus on the DITCOM parts. If you're interested to read into this, then you can check the GitHub repo of the wallet security and the HackMD of the recent calls. But in general, what we want to do is to do a device binding, and we need to generate a secure key in the holder's wallet. And then the issuer can check that this is a key that's coming from hardware, and then this can be referenced in the credential, and therefore we bind a credential to the wallet. And we thought about it, and looking into certain options here on how to achieve this. And I would like to present those and maybe get your feedback, what you think is a valid option, because you have probably more experience with DITCOM as you've seen.
So Paul, I know you don't want to go through the whole discussion, but can you give us a little bit of a top level, like with the scope of the problem that you're trying to address with device binding?
Okay. So in general, if you want to go to regulated use cases or high security use cases, in general, you need three things, and you need to be sure that the credential stays on the device. And well, that's not the first aim, but that's the result. You want to prevent that your credential and the corresponding keys are copied and multiplied and are susceptible to theft and misuse. And the way that you can do that is in general that you prevent the copying of the keys that are used to use a credential. And the way that you can do this is mostly by putting the keys in hardware, because these hardware chips like secure elements, secure enclave, HSMs, whatever, TPMs, they are built in a high security way such that you cannot extract the keys. So the worst scenario that can happen is you kind of get onto the device and you can use the key, but you can't extract the key. So you can misuse only the device itself, but you can't multiply the credential. And this is the main idea to device binding, and device binding is one pillar for wallet security. You also need then the user authentication, and you need to make sure that the wallet itself is not tampered with. These are the two other pillars. But yeah, device binding is the most important one. And how you want to get this done is that the issuer contacts the holder and says, are you like a high security wallet that enables device binding? And then we get into the question how to bootstrap this process. This could be probably maybe done with like DITCOM Discover features. We need some way to say, to make the wallet say, what are my wallet security capabilities? And does it support device binding and wallet authentication? And if we're past this step, then the issuer can say, okay, I want a key on the wallet that is generated from hardware and have a key attestation. And then, so later on, I can link this key with a credential, and in this way, the credential is bound to this device and the credential cannot be copied. That's the high level view. Was that clear?
Yes. Yep. Thanks for that intro.
Okay. So the process of the device binding is now something that is in the first step related to the issuance, and then later we also have the verification step where we need to have the same step. If this is a credential that is connected with device binding, then also we need to make sure how to make the verifier know that this this works and how this works out. But for now, I only want to focus on the issuance part. And the way we've seen it, there might be two different options. Option 1A is to define a new DITCOM protocol. And option B would be to extend the existing ones with decorators, attachments, or whatsoever. So what do we need in general to do here is, this is a sequence diagram from a proprietary system that was built last year. And now the idea is to standardize that process into a DITCOM protocol. But the essential step here is only that the issuer sends over a nonce, and then the SSI wallet generates a key and then sends a challenge response signature based on this nonce and a key attestation, and then sends that back. So it's not very complicated. It's a ping and a pong. So we send a nonce and we get back a key, maybe a key attestation, and a challenge signature. So challenge is the same as nonce. That's not very wise, the wording here, but was that clear?
It does. I have a question. Is this a key created within the device's key store, in the sense that, you know, of course you can't extract the private key?
Yeah.
So in the flow diagram above that you have, what prevents the SSI wallet from lying about it? Meaning, what prevents them from creating a key, but not in the hardware, key store, but rather another one that it then shares with other bad actor SSI wallets?
Yeah, mainly two mechanisms. The one are key attestations. So, for example, if you get something from a trusted execution environment or a Strongbox, you get a key attestation with certificates that prove that this is coming from a secure a key storage. And the second one is wallet authentication. And then wallet authentication is the second pillar. So the wallet needs to make a proof that it is not tampered with. And that's like the second topic.
So I know that wallet authentication is something that is more or less supported by both of the mobile platforms. Is the key attestation also supported by both platforms?
No, key attestation is only supported by Android. So the iOS keys that we get are not a key attested. It kind of weighs up a little bit because the iOS infrastructure in general is way more secure than the Android one. And the Apple folks are also working and upgrading their stuff, and that the keys from the secure enclave also have a key attestation. But the status quo is that the most phones in the market don't have a key attestation for the iOS secure enclave.
But if you do have the app attestation,
yeah,
then that's probably good enough to verify that it's not a misbehaving app. Yeah. So, okay.
Yes. Cool. So yeah, so Android is not as super safe, but we got the key attestations and then the wallet authentication on top. And then for iOS, we got the wallet authentication and a more mature ecosystem where it's okay that we don't have key attestations.
That's right. So it's Tim here. I thought with iOS, when you do an app attestation, you get the key attestation as well. I mean, that's part of that app attestation process. That key that is used to do the app attestation is itself attested to. Is that not correct? Or
yeah, the keys that are used there are not the ones that are hardware backed. So that's kind of two different things, unfortunately.
Okay, I thought they were okay. Thanks.
Okay, so.
So the thing is, before credential issuance, we need a ping and a pong to send a nonce and get back a key and a signature and maybe some attestation data. So I'll jump into this proposal. So I think then it gets clear. So we want to produce an ARIES RFC, and we could put a new DIDCOM protocol called device binding. And we have two messages, that is a request and a response. And in the request, you could say, okay, I accept these certain secure environments. And you could put in here one or maybe two or whatever you like as the issuer. And then you send a nonce. And then the wallet, the holder's wallet can answer in the response message. And then it could reference, oh, this is my current architecture, and I have the signature in here. And for Android, I would have that certificate chain that is the key attestation. So that would mean we run this protocol first, and then afterwards we run issue credential v1, v2, v3, whatever you like. And you can put the key inside there somehow.
And this looks great for a couple of reasons. First of all, you can, but because of the protocol discovery, you can discover that the device supports device binding prior to engaging in this. So mm-hmm. That's a nice bootstrapping feature. I also like that this is generic enough that it could work with multiple environments, and then provide that attestation. The other thing I like about this from a security perspective, or from a rather a privacy perspective, is that the wallet can generate one of these unique bindings per connection on the other side, which means that you avoid creating an identifier that can't be or that can easily track the user across multiple connections. If I understand this correctly, then that is a feature that it provides.
Towards the last point, the question is how you use this key. This is not directly set in here. So one way, for example, how we would use it, is that you put the key inside the credential as an attribute. That would be something that you would do, for example, with anencrats, because we don't have an ID or a DID itself in the anencrats. But you could also use it as a DID and maybe make it, you could make a DID rotation to that key, or you could prove it in some other way afterwards that you have that key. But in general, I think it probably has to be referenced in the credential, and the privacy mechanism is that you would have one device binding key per credential. So you don't have a super cookie for all credentials, but you would have one secure key per credential, not per connection.
That does provide a common identifier. I understand the tension here, but that does provide one common identifier for every presentation of that individual credential that receives the attribute.
Yeah.
So there's a huge correlation factor introduced by including it in the credential.
Okay. We've researched for a long time and we don't see any other way of doing this. Unfortunately, we know the privacy consequence, but the core problem is that these mechanisms, they don't support zero knowledge proofs. So you will end up with a correlatable identifier anyway, because if the underlying infrastructure doesn't support zero knowledge proofs, then you will always end up with a trackable identifier. There's no way around it, probably.
Well, one thing that go ahead, Paul. I'm just saying, you're only using this for high assurance type scenarios, talking to banks and issuers that already have high certainty of who you are as well. I don't know if those are the use cases we're looking at it for the Ontario context.
I think that makes sense. Exactly. The thing that worries me is not the issuer, it's the verifier, is that as soon as a credential like this exists, then that's going to be quite popular for people to verify because you just introduced a super cookie.
Yeah. Well, one thing we're thinking of is putting a warning into the wallet to tell a user if this is not blinded, if this particular key is being requested. But yeah, it certainly, people could use it in ways that we didn't envision.
So I think a warning is a good start along the right direction. Steve McCowan, your hand's up.
On the correlatable identifier, the iOS Secure Enclave supports the ECIES encryption scheme, which is kind of a key derivation scheme, so you don't have to actually pass keys back and forth. I don't know if the other platforms support that, but that might be an option to cut down on the correlatable identifier.
And but that's is it a Diffie-Hellman key exchange, or what, or is it an encryption mechanism, or what is it?
It's called the elliptic curve integrated encryption scheme. And I can post a link in the chat, so you can take a look out of it. It's like a Diffie-Hellman, but it's got some differences too. We were using that for a way to be able to create a key in your secure enclave without passing it through in the first place. So I'll grab just a kind of an overview link, and I'll post that in the chat, and maybe we talk about that another time after you've had a chance to see if it suits your needs or not.
Yeah. It's in general, it's a highly complicated topic, and I'm doing this discussion not for the first time. So I'm thinking about maybe writing the whole motivation down, so it's more understandable, the path that we took, because we're thinking about this for like more than half a year already. And we didn't find a solution. And I think there is none because these mechanisms don't support any. But I think that may be a separate discussion. I would like to present both solution and get the DITCOM perspective apart from the privacy discussion in this call, if that's okay for you.
So there's two things that you're talking about here. One is a protocol which enables device binding through the protocol, meaning you can verify that it is in fact the same device that you, because of the key control that exists only in the key store, and can't be moved to another device. You are verifying that this is the same device as last time. The second thing is you're using that identifier to bind into a credential. So I would encourage you to propose those things independently. Obviously, one depends on the other. But if you propose them as separate RFCs, it means that the device binding protocol piece can actually be leveraged in a variety of ways in the future, and not really just in this very specific way. Similarly, if we decide for some reason to deprecate or to adjust how it's bound into a credential, then that can happen without adjusting the original protocol. So
yeah, I agree totally. And okay. I think it was designed in this way. We don't say how we use this key afterwards. And because what I've already seen probably for anencrats or for like JSON-LD W3C credentials, you might use them differently. So for anencrats, you would probably put this key in an attribute, and for W3C credentials, you could use it as a DIT and have that in the ID of the credential. So there's different ways of how to use it. And I would like to, don't say how to use this key in the device binding, but have just a secure exchange of saying, I want a secure key from this and I get it back. And how I use it afterwards in the issue credential V1 for anencrats is my choice.
Right. So you mentioned application binding as well. Is that something that you're also pursuing, or is that a separate?
Yeah, so this was option 1A in defining a new DITCOM protocol. And then what other folks were suggesting is that you could extend it to the existing credential issue credential protocols and put it in there as decorators. And this is the alternative how you could do it. It has several benefits and some drawbacks, mainly that you have to do this for different issuance protocols. And it has the advantage that you have fewer messages because you don't have the additional ping pong protocol up front. And the idea here is that you, so this is the status quo. We have propose, offer, request, and issue credential. And then what we could do is that we extend the offer credential with the device binding request. And then the device binding response is integrated here in the request credential object. So that's the alternative. And there's some questions where we weren't sure if this is a good choice or not.
My personal response is that it can be done. I prefer the explicit protocol because I think it is more generally useful to do so. One of the thoughts that I have that's slightly independent of these two options is that one of the things that could be done is, I have to think about this a little bit more, but it might be possible to include rather as an attribute of the credential, it might be possible to include the device binding as a as an attachment separate from the credential. And what that effectively means, if I understand this right, is that the person who receives the device binding and the credential can be assured that that's it comes from the same place, but that they can't prove that to somebody else because they're not bound together in the same credential. And so that would be an interesting way to mitigate a little bit of the risk of introducing a correlatable identifier. But that needs to be, that's a bit of a separate discussion, but I of the two options here, an explicit protocol or adjusting credentials, I think that having an independent protocol for device binding is desirable from my perspective.
Yeah, I also wasn't sure if this really works out, because in the offer credential, we have this credential preview. And if you put the secure public key as an attribute into the credential, it would be pretty hard to put it into the preview here. So then in the end, the credential preview here without the key might be different from what comes afterwards in the issue credential. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And if the wallet would check that credential preview is the same as the one that I get in the final message, then maybe it, some wallets would reject the credential because it's not the same that I was offered in the offer credential phase. Okay, so so you say you would also agree with having it as a separate protocol.
I do, but I'm only one opinion here.
Yeah.
Anyone else have a thought here?
Any other opinions?
We're unfortunately missing a few folks that I'd love to hear their opinions on, including Stephen mm-hmm. Curran. He must be busy today. I'm also curious about Daniel Hardman's views, and he also is missing today.
Yeah, I could represent that next week. Also,
if you could also share this in the Aries channel with links and then tag both Stephen and Daniel, I think that we could get some responses that way.
In the Discord.
In the Discord channel.
Yeah. And then the second question was a little bit, how do, in designing this, how would you put in these things here? Because would you do it similar, like in the issuance protocol, where you have an offers attachment? And what's the pro and con of doing it in an attachment, or put it in like directly in line?
So I can offer some feedback on that. This is kind of a protocol best practices question. So the reason why attachments were used in the credential exchange is because it was anticipated that there would be a lot of variability in the types of credentials. Now, in practice, there's only been a couple, but they were looking at the fact that the variability would in fact be present. In your case, the variability is in the types of secure key storage that are possible, and the dividing line on whether to use an attachment versus just to use inline attributes mostly comes down to how much the mechanisms of the secure key storage can change without adjusting the protocol itself, and that's a bit of a challenge. This is a little bit like you have to know the future in order to make the right choice, and we can only guess at the future. The side effect is that if something substantially changes, meaning like a new key storage mechanism is introduced, et cetera, and it might have different workflow semantics, you might find yourself producing a revision to the device binding protocol in order to accommodate it. That can be slightly adjusted in the case of using it, attachments, meaning it can handle greater variability there because the schema of the message is is disconnected from the schema of the attachment, but you still have to revise the schema of the attachment in such a way that it becomes meaningful. And realistically, any software that implements this protocol has to understand both. So there's not, I think, except in a couple of narrow cases, there's not a huge advantage to the attachment feature. And because of what's required by implementing software anyway, and it simplifies some things. For example, protocol discovery to not take the attachment approach and just list them as attributes directly in a protocol message. So I would encourage you to pursue the non-attachment method. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That reflects my thoughts on it too. So the main reason would be if we have new versions here coming up and we don't know how these look like yet, then it would be nice if we have attachments. And this was a little bit what I was sketching here, because I said, okay, this is TEE version 1, and therefore we have a attachment that's kind of linked here with the ID probably, because the data structure of what is given back by the wallet might be a little different, because for Android, we have an Android certificate chain that is completely different structure than the iOS stuff or what a TPM would give me. So the data is inherently different. And the question was, therefore, does it make sense to use attachments?
You could, and as long as what I would encourage is that you specify that the attachment comes in as a JSON attachment. And that, and there's also, in addition to MIME type, there's another way of indicating specifically what type of data is actually there. So if you see that you have the key storage type above, but it would be useful to define an attachment that was self-declarative in the sense that you could attach the key binding to any message and still understand that that's a key binding attachment. So some very slight adjustments to what you've proposed here would accommodate that, and I think would be very useful. I think that having or declaring how a key binding would actually be sent as an attachment could be really useful, not in the sense of this specific protocol, but generally speaking, you could say, hey, I'm now proving the key, the device binding key, and you know, with a signature, et cetera, and that would work. Mm-hmm. So you typically need a nonce or a challenge, right? The other way to do it is to, doesn't have the same security properties, but has the advantage of not having a round trip, is that you can have a standard for how the nonce is actually derived, such that you could preemptively create a very short-lived nonce, including, for example, that included the DID of the connection you were communicating over, and a timestamp, and then that would be sufficiently hard to change or to happen rapidly that you might be able to some level trust the signature, even though a completely unique nonce was not provided by the other side. Certainly, you can allow for the providing of a nonce, but in some circumstances, it might be sufficiently unique to so as to allow that to occur.
I think for the I had the same thoughts. I think for the high security use case, it's not enough.
I agree. Because,
yeah, the DID of the issuer party is probably known, and then I can look into the future and take a future timestamp.
It depends if the DIDCOM channel is using the well-known DID or if it's using a unique DID for the conversation. Just because an issuer has a well-known DID that they use for issuance doesn't mean that they need to use that DID in a connection sense, and can rather use a pairwise DID for those connections.
Yeah.
So it depends a little bit on those circumstances, but yes. Yeah. So this is great work. I would, if you wouldn't mind posting these links and with a little bit of background to the Aries channel, and that way we can get some feedback from some others, that would be fantastic.
Okay, great.
And unfortunately, we're out of time, but I'm super grateful for you presenting this and for your work in this area. I think that application binding and device binding are going to be important in the future for those high security use cases. And so having this advance in this manner, I think, is incredibly powerful. So grateful for your work there. And with that, thanks everyone for coming. I hope your week is a great one, and we will see you around.
Thank you. Bye.